The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 418, recorded on March 21st, 2016. Welcome to the 418th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 251st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Durr.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, I'm glad to see TJ's back from bowling.
Yes, welcome back.
Did you score 300?
I won last week. Not quite, but we won last week. We won so bad that the other team kind of rage quit.
Oh, nice.
Then you should have just joined us while they were rage quitting.
Well, they did it, like, right at the end of the game.
Oh. Okay. So, where are you?
Where am I?
Yeah, location-wise, because I'm thinking about bowling, and the different... Every state has their own way of bowling.
Texas, duh.
Oh, what is Texas bowling like?
I'm in a very German area, so they do a lot of nine pin is a sort of popular thing down here, but the one I do in the league is 10 pin regular style.
Do you have different, see, the thing about bowling leagues is that, you know, you have beers and snacks. What kind of snacks do you have?
They serve popcorn, but, there's a whole snack bar there. They do all sorts of stuff.
Popcorn, yeah. In a bowling alley?
Oh yeah, they do the whole shebang. It's like a carnival snack bar, dude, they have there.
Dude, hot dogs and wings, come on.
Of course.
Fries or burgers or whatever you feel like.
Burgers are acceptable. I'm just saying hot dogs and wings are the staples now.
Yeah, and they have all that stuff.
And I don't drink beer though, so.
See, and I do. And in fact, my bowling game increases as I do.
You're relaxed and you're in the flow, you're in the zen.
Yeah. I'm one of those I'm super uptight. Like if I have full soberness, then I'm very uptight and I think about everything I do, so that ruins my game. And if I drink, then I get more loose, and if I drink too much, I get way too loose. So there's a middle area.
It's like the drunken kung fu master thing. You have to balance that balance.
Yes, moderation. It's important, mm-hmm. Kids.
So aside from bowling, what have you been playing, TJ?
For review this last week, I checked out this game called End of the Stars.
Ooh, and yes. Isn't that that's a collectible card game, no?
No.
No, wait, oh, there's a different one that's, yeah, anyway.
If you're familiar with Oregon Trail or more recently FTL,
okay.
It's much like that. It's a space-based pilgrimage roguelike game. And you take on an arc with a few people that you pick out that have certain stats, and you make a run for this far distant planet while being chased by hostile aliens. And it was fun. It was very fun.
Name of it again?
That's End of the Stars.
End of the Stars?
Into
the Star. Oh, okay, that's why I got confused. Is that the one that you, what's it called, people have to resort to cannibalism at some point or am I thinking of a different...
No, I know what you're talking about, but it's not that.
Yeah, there is a game in which it is brutal, and at some points you have to decide whether you're going to eat each other or not.
Into the Stars is a very much more straightforward sort of like FTL or Oregon Trail, where you actively travel across an entire galaxy to... Well, the idea is that this alien race is pretty much ravaged Earth, and you have to find a you have to get to this far distant planet that can support life.
When you say roguelike game, I always think of a thief game, but I think you mean something else when you say roguelike.
Well, roguelike, well, you know, FTL is a roguelike.
Yeah.
I don't understand how that's rogue.
Well, because a roguelike is a game in which the mechanics are the same, but the situations change every time.
I'm going to tell you something. We're going to get into roguelikes in the news anyway, so we don't have to get into the definition just yet. Basically, everybody's common perception is it's a random dungeon, hack and slash, and permadeath. That's basically people's definition of a roguelite.
Right. And Into the Stars is fun once you're in the game, but I will say this. The loading screens hang. Well, they hung for me to the point where I had to shut down the game and reinstall it several times. Might wait until they fix that up and patch that through. But it's really fun once you're in the game, but man, when the loading screens hang like that, and actually, at one point, when you get to the end of the game, when you make it to the end slate, it'll get a loading screen, and if it hangs there and you have to restart, it'll kill your save.
Beyond Earth is a long loading screen as well. That's one of the reasons why I haven't been really getting into it. I don't know what the problem with Civilization Beyond Sid Meier's Civilization Beyond Earth is, but I'm waiting for them to fix it.
Yeah,
don't hold your breath.
So, how about you?
Well, I got farther into Stardew Valley. I also found that they have mods for it, which will there's one to slow down the passage of time on the game, which I felt was an issue for me because I mean this game is supposed to be relaxing, and yet I feel like the day is so short and there's like so many things to do that I'm kind of in a rush trying to get them all, which seems to be the exact opposite of what they want, which is supposed to be relaxing, doing some farming, you're talking to people, do some mining, whatever, because you want to get away from the rat race is the whole point. So it's kind of like they're putting you in a rat race. It's just in the country setting. So it's like, that's why I like that to have that mod in there. So that helps. And what else? I got farther in King's Quest.
Third chapter came out, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I haven't seen the third chapter yet, just the second chapter. That's what I'm playing currently. I thought
you completed the second chapter.
I haven't completed it yet, no. I like I said, I got stuck, and the problem with those kind of games is if you get stuck and you can't figure out what to do, you just stop, and then you come back later, and sometimes later might be months or years or whatever.
Unfortunately, you know, an old school game like King's Quest, if you get stuck, you may have to restart from an earlier save point, because some of those games, you know, you put yourself in a corner, there's no way to get out. You know?
Yeah, like if you missed an item or something, yeah, that was really, they were famous for doing that sort of thing. But current point and click adventure games try to steer away from that by making sure you have everything you need, you know, that you won't paint yourself into a corner. So I think they've generally
fixed
that.
The character will say, "I don't think I should be doing that."
or something like that, or it's like you're not ready to go here yet or something because you're missing an item or something that you didn't pick up, so you have to find what that little thing is, and that could be equally as frustrating when you swear you've clicked everywhere and there's just one little whatever
spot. I'll do you a favor, don't play Broken Age, because the second half will drive you fucking nuts.
Okay.
it has some of the most obscure puzzles you're going to see this side of 1990.
Oh man, I loved that game though.
What, Broken Age?
Yeah.
Oh, so did I. I mean, I was forewarned about the puzzles and having to swap back and forth, and you know, here's the thing, Broken Age, I'm going to give you a hint, you actually have to write down stuff. You better write down stuff.
Oh wow, that is old school.
Yeah, you got to write down stuff because you're going to Because it flips you between things, and you have to remember what you did before. So,
right.
Yeah, you have to write down
cool.
stuff. Yeah. I mean, if you want to do it, you know, just be ready to be to go to one of the facts. And sometimes the facts aren't even all that clear either. Because I reached the ending. It was a great ending. I don't want to play it again. It's not like Grim Fandango or Full Throttle, you know, in which, you know, it was a great story. It was a great story, but it is... So you have to do so much crap in it. It is maybe you love it. Maybe it's an old school, and it's not even like a LucasArts game, you know, because LucasArts games still, you know, handheld you a little bit. I mean, you could die in Full Throttle, but, you know, they never steered you wrong. Here, you gotta pay attention to everything. It's an old school. It's what if Tim Schafer did a Sierra Online game from the from the early 90s.
I think they also they're about to release the last of the Minecraft Story Mode episodes, because I saw the achievements are
Is that
open.
Over yet?
No, there's one more chapter.
Wow. Wasn't Chapter 4 like a couple of months ago?
Yeah, and then Chapter 5 is supposed to be released.
Maybe they're going to force you to play an entire game in Minecraft to reach the end.
I don't know. I guess it's some sort of epilogue to go over all the different choices you've made and see what, you know, comes of all those choices.
Yeah. Actually, we're going to be talking about Telltale in a bit as well. So as for me, I've been playing Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. I've actually been spending money on it. You know, and even though, you know, I just played a game not an hour ago in which I earned 33,000 coins in a solo garden ops. Wow. And it was just on the average difficulty, because all I really wanted to do was get the 3 stars for completing that particular level. You know, you get stars which you can do stuff with. But then I saw, oh, look, it's enchanted. Okay, I'll do the enchanted thing on average. And then I just got coins and coins and coins. And the very last level was a boss level. I got 3 diamonds, which was a jackpot of 10,000 coins. And wow. Then I got an additional 2,000 coins. And I was doing all these perfect things. So I ended up with 33,000 coins. Which, and you know, I said, screw it, I'll just spend $10, get 280,000 coins to add to that, so I could go on a little spending spree on stuff, which actually helped me out, because I got some extra plant, I forgot, the Chompy, the Audrey 2, Little Shop of Horrors guy. I got a bunch of additional abilities for them, so that was, even though that's not my main guy, I prefer to use, the gangster, the corn on the cob. And also everybody's favorite, a pea shooter. On the zombie side, I always play the imp. And it's not because he's an N7 imp or Z7 imp. Basically, he's Commander Shepard. But he also fits the style I play. So there's that.
Yeah, the Minecraft Story Mode is releasing its last episode, or at least episode 5, tomorrow. So I was just checking tomorrow. On that. Yep, okay. That'll be real soon. Okay.
But wait, did you already buy episode 3 of King's Quest?
I bought the season pass, so that should probably be in there.
Okay. I assume you've been playing Minecraft.
Of course, yes.
Do you still play Civ 5? I mean, aside from the turncasts.
Yeah, I'll do little campaigns. I'll start up one and kill everybody kind of thing. That's usually what I do. I just destroy all the other civs.
I stopped playing Master of Orion, and not because I don't like it, but because, you know, I'm just going to wait for the next update to see what they do. Like I said, it's early access, so it's not a big crime to stop playing, you know, because you're just waiting for it to actually get released. I actually contacted Brad Wardell about Master of Magic 2, and if he got the license, and no. That's what I want to see, is Master of Magic 2. Master of Magic.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Master of Magic is Magic the Gathering meets Civilization.
That sounds cool.
It's on Gold Oil Games. You should try it, play it. It's addictive as hell.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see if they make any announcements of Civ 6. People keep waiting. Yeah.
By the way, when we said that Electronic Arts and EA bolted from E3, they're not the only ones. Two other major companies decided not to attend. I'm trying to remember who they are. They're major ones. And it was like the week after we talked about it.
Who was it?
Maybe it's Disney? Maybe Disney and... I don't know. But yeah, a lot of people have been abandoning E3, and... See, I had to make a choice. I had to either go to PAX East or to E3. And I already told you this. I chose E3, and now it looks like they're not going to be there. Okay, so the others who left... Oh, yeah, Wargaming, who always has a huge, huge floor presence because they love to sell their games. And who's the other one? By the way, Wargaming is the one who's doing Master of Magic. And I keep on thinking it's Firaxis, even though, of course, it isn't. So, I already told you what I've been playing. And we're going to move on to the first news item, which, you know, and I know, for those of you who've been listening to this podcast, Scott has been complaining about this up and down, left and right. And now it looks like it may be coming to a head now. Nintendo deletes every stage by prominent Mario Maker speedrunner. And this comes to us from Kotaku. Nintendo has a real problem in its hands with Mario Maker. Left and right, creators are seeing their levels removed from online servers without an explanation. David Grand Pooh Bear Hunt, a speedrunner who makes a living streaming games, is the latest victim. All of his levels have vanished. As Hunt prepped for an appearance on this week's speedrunning event, Californathon, he discovered that Mario Maker stages had disappeared. Wow, all of my levels just got deleted off Mario Maker, he tweeted earlier today. All my stars are gone. By the way, when I wrote this item, it was only 2 hours old. So this is like fresh, hot, fresh off the press, right? When a stage is deleted from Mario Maker servers, you cannot change it and re-upload it. You just have to build the level again from scratch and hope Nintendo doesn't find it a second time. And because Nintendo doesn't provide creators with feedback on why a level is removed, it's a crapshoot. Hunt, who estimates he spent more than 100 hours uploading levels, is telling the truth when his Mario Maker profile is bare. And they had a screenshot showing, zero stars. Stars are equivalent to likes in the Mario Maker community, a way for players to recommend a stage. Nintendo regularly deletes unpopular stages, making stars a precious commodity. It keeps your stages alive. Streaming Mario Maker is 90% of my stream, which is 90% of my overall income so far in 2016, Hunt told Kotaku. After the levels were deleted, he got a hold with a Nintendo customer support. He recorded the conversation and uploaded it. The customer service representative didn't have much to offer. His account hadn't been flagged for any inappropriate activity. Showed no marks of cheating or level infringement, common reasons that levels are taken down. The phone call ended without any resolution, as with anyone who knows about this, and I think Scott is about to talk about it. Nintendo did not respond to Kotaku or anybody else for comment. So, Scott, go ahead, fire away.
It feels like Nintendo's just gone full retard. I mean, there's no reason for this at all. People want to show how great Nintendo is, or great their games are, anyways. And Nintendo just does not know how to do the internet at all. I don't think they even understand that people are out there trying to, basically promote Nintendo. Nintendo needs this kind of promotion, in fact, because, you know, there's all this other competition for video game attention, and people have shorter and shorter time to play games. So when you have somebody who's streaming all these Mario games and other people who make content for Nintendo, and Nintendo just doesn't seem to care and rolls over on people like this. I mean, this guy seems to put a lot of time and effort, because building levels, that's not easy. And apparently he can't – I don't even know if he has it saved on a hard drive or anything. It sounds like you just build it on their server and then it's poof gone if they feel like it, and they don't even tell you. And it's a real slap in the face. I don't know what Nintendo's thinking. I don't think they're thinking anything at all. It's like the YouTube issue.
When I look at Nintendo, everything they do from a business standpoint is almost as if they think it's still 1989 and nothing has changed.
Games have the Nintendo seal of approval on them.
Yeah, they do. Like if they're officially licensed by them, then they do. And they still act as though they're at the top of the game and they can act with full impunity on the situation. Everything about them you hear is like it's difficult to get a dev kit. You have to license through Nintendo. If Nintendo finds anyone using their work without licensing fees, they'll take it down immediately.
They'll threaten legal on a poor guy who just has some scribbling. Actually, that wasn't Nintendo. That was the other company, the Pokemon company. But that reminds me of what happened to that guy at the Pokemon company in E3 when he wanted to hold a party and everybody paid $5, and he's like raised $65 for this party, and they were like threatening he had to pay like $4,000 in legal fees.
But like it's like when Mario Maker launched in the first place and people were putting it on their YouTube channels, and then those episodes got pulled down because they were tagged by Nintendo. And it's like, what are you doing? This is the best way to promote your game, and you're pulling this stuff down. It's not 1990 anymore. It's not – you're not at the top of the ladder. They're kind of insane from a business standpoint.
I agree. They're insane, and I think a little bit in trouble too, because they have stagnated, and I know Paul would probably agree with us on that. And but you know, they really, I don't know. I was kind of hoping that with the change of who's in charge, that they would hopefully get more with the times. But it, I don't know, it seems slow in coming, if at all. I just don't know.
Now, you have to understand, some of the timing of this is going to be a little bit off too, because Nintendo's about to unveil the NX at E3, and I'm wondering if they keep on thumbing their noses at their fans, if the fans are even going to care. I mean, they already said no thank you to the Wii U. They may just say no thank you to the NX.
Just out of spite.
It's not a really just out of hard spite, situation.
But it may not just give them what they want. I mean, the problem with that Nintendo is not only have they been thumbing their noses at gamers, they haven't been giving them the content they want either.
That's true.
It's a really hard situation because, I mean, you have the Miyamotos and the Satoru Iwatas and Nintendo that actually care about this stuff and want people to care about Nintendo.
Sure? I mean, they may care about the game design. Doesn't mean they care about the people playing them.
Those aren't. Well, I mean.
They were doing this legal stuff when they were in charge too, you know. Even worse.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that those are. Even passion can only go so far. If you have no sort of repertoire with your fans, then yeah, that can only go so far.
I mean, here's the thing. Nintendo has fans, but do they have fans anymore? And by fans, I don't mean hardcore fans, just fans who trust them. I don't know if there's any trust left.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, there's definitely people out there that will love Nintendo until they die just because of the nostalgia and the memories. But they're certainly not building new fans with the new generation.
I'm definitely not feeling the love anymore from Nintendo. I mean, I don't think I feel like I grew up and then Nintendo just. Is like, yeah, you're not our customer anymore. We don't need you. You're too old for us, kind of thing. And that's what it feels like with Nintendo.
One last thing about the NX is that at first they thought it was going to have more processing power than the Xbox One, which it should, since this is several years since the Xbox One was released. But now Michael Pachter and other people are reporting that it's going to be weaker than the Xbox One /PS4. And I'm trying to think, what are you doing?
Why even bother then?
Why? What are you doing? Are you just doing it so that you can, I don't know, have HDTV, what's it called, compatibility now? Or is,
I don't
are you going
to
graduate to 1080p? Is that it?
I don't really care about the power of the console. I just want the content.
Well,
you know, good quality content.
Well, you have to have that content evolving, though. I mean, are you seriously going to want to play, say, Twilight Princess HD Remaster, or do you want something new?
I want something new, but it doesn't have to be the bestest graphic card ever. I mean,
best graphics.
People are like,
I'm not thinking resolution. I'm thinking about number of objects on the screen,
right?
Or AI. I didn't even have to
buy a new card for Fallout 4. Is what I mean. I just stuck with what I had. And you know, even though they were recommending, the minimum recommended was like a $300 card, but I didn't bother getting it because I played it and played all of it pretty much just on an older card that was like at least a year old.
What I'm saying is that, you know, Nintendo weren't, I don't know if it wasn't Sony, it was Nintendo, used to brag about the processing power of their machines by showing how many balls could bounce on the screen at once, you know, how many balls it can render. And that's basically what you really want from processing power. It isn't all about resolution, because people have been talking about, Quantum Break is only going to be at 720p, but the thing about that is that it has a lot of graphic shaders and lighting and all that and visual effects that make it look even better than if it was on 1080p or whatever.
You can make a pretty boring-looking game. I mean, it could be all pretty, have all the nice graphics, but it's still boring to me if it's not, you know, good content, you know, something that I want to play. And, you know, I really don't care if it's in HD or not. I just, like, I'm playing Stardew Valley. That's like it looks like it came off the SNES, and I'm having fun with it. I don't need the latest and greatest, most beautiful looking thing. I just need it to be a fun, entertaining game.
There's a difference between graphics and processing power. I'm not talking about graphics necessarily. Yeah. I'm talking about processing power. And you have to be able to do more, you know, in order to, unless you want to have something like, Silent Hill, in which there was fog all over the place, not because fog was part of the game, they just worked it in because they didn't have any processing power to render anything, you know.
Right.
We'll see. Those of you out there, let us know what you think. In the meantime, TJ, take the next item.
Okay. Batman. Telltale's take on Batman will be M-rated, launches this summer, from Game Watcher. At the South by Southwest Gaming Expo, with assistance from Kinda Funny's Greg Miller, Telltale unleashed the info on their version of The Dark Knight. They're planning on an M rating and won't be directly based on any specific version of the character. The story will focus on Batman himself, rather than the supporting cast. So if Robin, Nightwing, etc. show up, it will be in a supplementary rather than starring role. You can expect franchise staples like Alfred, Vicky Vale, James Gordon, and Renee Montoya to show up, however. Beyond that, most of their description made it sound like a Telltale game. You'll split the difference between playing as Batman or Bruce Wayne, and the actions you take will affect Bruce's situation in the daytime, as well as the criminals Batman battles at night. Certain events will require you to decide whether to investigate them as Batman or Bruce, and of course, different outcomes will result from that choice. They didn't release any images of the visuals, but they said they were committed to a non-photorealistic interpretation that would take inspiration from the works of over 75 years of artists such as Jim Lee, Greg Capullo, and Neil Adams, which is very much in line with Telltale's house style.
You know, the thing
I
like...
cell shading?
What?
Does that mean cell shading?
Oh, probably. You're probably going to have something like The Walking Dead, you know.
Okay.
But in a more comic book form. You know what I'd love to see if they, instead of having subtitles, they have word balloons pop up? That would be better than just having, you know, words on the bottom of the screen with the subtitles. You actually have the word balloons comic style.
That would be interesting.
That'd be neat.
Yeah, the thing that excites me the most is, do you want to solve this as Batman or do you want to solve it as Bruce Wayne? I mean, there might be some people who decide, I'm going to do this entire adventure taking the Bruce Wayne option as much as possible as I possibly can, just to see what Bruce is doing on his own.
This is the first time I've ever heard of a Batman game where you play Bruce and not just Batman beating up bad guys. You're going to be Bruce where you're going to probably, like, what, wheel and deal and or
well, in the beginning of Arkham stuff? The City, you had to beat people up as Bruce Wayne.
Okay, well, I take it when they say Bruce versus Batman is that Bruce would not be the Bruce sections of the game would be the non-fighting parts where you're probably having dialogue and talking to people and trying to do deals or plots or whatever.
Thing as Batman though, I mean, all the combat's going to be with Batman.
Yeah.
But at certain points, you're going to have to decide if you're going to investigate something as Bruce or something with Batman, and I can easily see that. Say Bruce would use his contacts at Wayne Enterprises to find out stuff. Well, Batman will investigate it himself. And they say that when it comes to combat, it'll be dependent on whether you did it as Bruce or as Batman. And that intrigues me a lot. I mean, when we talk about taking games to a next level, that's the sort of next level I want to see.
Yeah. It's interesting that it's going to be M, because when I first saw the logo and I saw the art style, I was kind of thinking they were going to go the Brave and the Bold route, but it's interesting that I'm curious if an M rating means they're going to, like, be on
I think it's going to be mature subject matter, and by mature, I mean mature. I don't mean blood and tits. I mean...
Yeah, I wouldn't think they're going to... I wouldn't think they're going to go as far as, like, Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns.
I'm not even of that. But maybe dealing with, say, what's it called, a child murderer or a child pedophile and all that stuff who murdered a girl and all that stuff, you know, which is really heavy subject matter and would earn it an M rating, even though you don't see anything. Right.
Or even just as simple as, like, if you make the wrong choices, then you get to the crime scene and the villain has already killed someone and gotten away, there's blood on your hands.
I mean, you'd have to see something like someone's brains blasted out or something. But yeah, I mean, which, you know, it sort of indicates to me this may be the Batman who's the technical pacifist, in which he's going to disable you for life, and you're not dead, you just can't earn a living anymore, and you'll be in constant pain for the rest of your life.
I am intrigued by this, so there's this, I might be getting this game.
You know what I like is that they didn't try to go for the teen rating, because usually, you know, when you go for the teen rating, it's sort of like you want to get as many people to play it as possible, right? It's sort of like getting PG-13 in a movie. With M, you're actually restricting people from playing it.
Right.
Which of course, makes it more enticing to people who are not allowed to play it. Or then, it's not that they're not allowed, they have to get parental approval.
Like the whole Deadpool movie where it was R-rated, and it just made people want to go see it, and apparently people didn't realize what R-rating means, and so they were greatly surprised.
Well, at least it wasn't NC-17.
I know, it practically should have been.
Yeah, I don't know, I wasn't a fan of that film.
I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah. You know, I just can't wait for Batman versus Superman, because
I have no interest in that movie.
Do you bleed?
Yeah.
I always wanted to see a movie in which someone wanted to see Superman bleed.
You know, every time.
I just don't want Superman films made by people who don't like Superman.
This seems like one.
Zack Snyder does not like Superman. If you ever watch any of the interviews, he denigrates the character so much. You know, we have to make
it's ridiculous. I'm tired of this whole good guys fighting each other. It makes no sense at all. I don't care. It's stupid.
Well, isn't that, you know, here's the thing. You can have the good guys at odds with each other. Oh, if you hate good guys fighting each other, just Captain America Civil War.
Yeah, I know.
That's going to be great, and I don't want to hear anything about it.
Really, the comics were terrible.
People are, oh my god, they're just, yeah, okay.
Why do Civil War, do Secret War, the first one? At least that was good. At least that was a good story. And you'd even have Spider-Man getting into the black outfit. Oh, we already did that in Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, but they've rebooted that, or they're going to reboot it.
They rebooted it twice. This is, yeah. Forget about Andrew Garfield too.
Yeah.
No Tobey Maguire, no Andrew Garfield. We're going to have someone new.
Good.
You know, sort of like three Hulks, you know. You have, Mark Ruffalo is the current one. Oh, Eric Bana and Edward Norton. You have three Hulks. I want all three of them to be in the same movie together.
I could deal with a Civil War trailer where it's just the Winter Soldier and Captain America beating the crap out of Iron Man for like 2 minutes straight. I would be cool with it.
I think they should have kept Spider-Man as a surprise.
Yeah. I've made some cracks about Spider-Man, but it is cool that they're bringing him into that universe. He looks interesting.
By the way, on a side note, did you see the Warcraft trailer?
Yes. Yeah,
it looks really awesome. Good. And the thing that gives me confidence about that movie is the director is Duncan Jones. And for those of you who don't know who Duncan Jones is, he's the son of the late David Bowie, and he directed Moon, and he also directed Source Code. So he does intellectual stuff. So you have a movie that's set in the Warcraft universe, but you have an intellectual... Hopefully it isn't something like The Hulk that was directed by Ang Lee. I think at least
he won't be going for the lowest common denominator, which is really what we need to get away from.
But it showed an orc and a human fighting in an arena, and it showed Stormund, and it showed Orzammar. So it's Orzammar is Dragon Age. I'm sorry. What is the dwarves home in World of Warcraft? It's been a while since I last
Iron Forge.
Sorry, I have Dragon Age on the brain. But apparently, you know, Iron Forge, you know, and maybe pre Orgrimmar, I don't know. But it looks really good. The CGI is it's okay. I mean, the orcs look good, the dwarves look really good. But the dragon, no. It looks straight out of what was the name of that movie with Sean Connery playing a dragon named Draco?
Dragonheart.
Yeah, Dragonheart. Straight out of Dragonheart.
That dragon was awesome.
Yeah, but it was fake.
Oh my god, dragons aren't real? Oh, you crushed my heart.
You know what?
Not real.
Do you know the best dragon of all who was ever rendered? And don't say Smaug or I'll slap you silly.
I was going to say Pete the Dragon would be the most fakest dragon wrench ever.
I haven't seen that since it was in theaters.
Or Puff the Magic Dragon. That's even worse.
No, it's Vermithrax Pejorative from Dragon Slayer.
Now, there are some really bad dragon renderings, and Smaug was fine.
Smaug was fine, but he wasn't better than Vermithrax.
Do you guys remember Aragorn? That's like a 2-hour movie of bad dragon
renderings. That was the Phantom Menace with dragons. The author, when he wrote the book, was 15 years old. And you can tell, I'm serious. He was 15 years old when he wrote the book, and you can tell what his inspiration was.
Yeah, it was so obvious. It was paint by the numbers. Oh, my God. We could see everything he was telegraphing. And I'm like, why are we celebrating him? Why are people going, oh, my God, this is no, this is like Star Wars. Oh, my God.
Hey, you know, in America, we respect the 15-year-olds who know how to read and write. And there's only a few of them, so we have to make sure that they become lauded for it.
Hey, we respect the 15-year-olds who know how to read and write and whose parents are part of a publishing company.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
It's young fiction. You can get away with a lot. Look at Goosebumps.
Yeah.
And R.L. Stein.
People were just clamoring like he was the next, like, I don't even know.
Here's the thing. Ever since The Lord of the Rings, every single studio has been looking for series of books, which is why they went so hard after the Narnia books, and why they went so hard after the Harry Potter books.
Well, actually, Wheel I think of it was Time, Harry Potter. Mistborn. There's the Shannara. Of course, MTV got that one.
You also have tons. The Mockingjay thing. The Hunger Games.
Yeah,
the Hunger Games. So when you have Eragon, it has a series of books. Also, you also have one that really failed to start a series was The Golden Compass. That didn't get off the ground. And by the way, neither did Narnia. It had two movie releases. The second one bombed badly. The third one was straight to Christian TV. I think it was on, ABC Family? It was specially made for ABC? I don't know. I think the third one. And all I'm thinking is that, the only good one was the first one that was animated done by Lee Mendelsohn, who people know from doing Charlie Brown the Charlie Brown specials.
Yeah.
I mean, in the live-action version, I never really felt sorry for Aslan. In the animated version, wow.
Oh, my God. I cried.
And even as an adult, it looks brutal, because when they cut off all his hair in live-action version, it's a lion. They don't really look that different when you cut off their hair, right? In a cartoon, however, wow. And they
really push it.
Yeah. I will say I did like, oh, darn, I forgot the name of the woman who played the White Queen. She was okay.
Emma Thompson? No, Emma...
It was sort of like Thora Birch, but not quite. Oh, boy. I'm going to remember this later.
She played Uma Thurman.
No. And no? She was nominated for an Oscar.
Not Uma Thurman. Who's like she played... God dang it, I know this one too. She played the Trelawney in Harry Potter. I'm sure of it.
I'm pretty sure you're right, but I never watched... I don't watch Harry Potter. I consider it the magic equivalent of... And you're going to hate me for this. The magic equivalent of Twilight for me.
Okay, you know what? I think I'm going to have to quit the show now. I'm like 2 seconds from hitting the hang up button. I'm going to fly to New York and kill you.
Tilda Swinton, by the way, is the name of the actress who played the White Witch. And she was nominated for. I know she was nominated. Oh, was it adaptation that she was nominated for? No. She won the Oscar for Michael Clayton. And, jeez, Michael Clayton. You know what's really making me feel old? Twitter today, March 21st, is the 10th anniversary of Twitter. And I could have sworn that Twitter was around a lot longer, but it's only started in 2006.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long. Like, gosh, I mean, 10 years. Yeah, that's not that long at all.
So here's the thing, Scott. Maybe you and I think Paul is a big fan of Harry Potter. I'm not sure.
Yeah, he's read the books, or he saw the movies. I don't know if he's read the books. He makes jokes like, yeah, I don't know if he has. But yeah, I do remember his comments about them.
Yeah, well, let's just say don't let Christopher Columbus near Harry Potter.
I think I have a bigger issue with the third movie, but yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ. You know, we should start renaming this podcast the Pop Culture, the Geek Pop Culture Podcast, where we talk about everything but video games.
Well, video games is part of geek pop culture.
You know what? I'm going to take this one. You can take the next one, okay? And this one is probably going to interest you, Scott, because it talks about an age, and I don't know if you remember this, in which there were no role-playing games for computers. The original Diablo design doc was to be a classic turn-based roguelike, and this comes to us from Game Watcher. It may seem hard to believe now, but back in the mid-90s, the role-playing game was dead in the West. Every publisher was pumping out new first-person shooters and real-time strategy games, while few, if any, of the major role-playing games were being released. This led to the rise of the Japanese role-playing game as console games were getting franchises such as Final Fantasy and Phantasy Star, and even ports of the classic PC game Ultima. But for PC gamers, the cupboard was bare in terms of role-playing games. Do you remember the early and mid-90s?
I think Final Fantasy is the reason why I remember playing any RPGs, so yeah, I think I know what you mean. I think after Ultima, Ultima game.
Let me continue with the article. We can continue. I just wanted to see if you remembered this. Then Diablo arrived in 1998. It was an instant smash hit. This game, along with Interplay's partnership with Black Isle, which brought back Fallout and Dungeons & Dragons titles starting with Baldur's Gate, single-handedly revived the JRPG for good. The story of Diablo was started in 1994 when David Brevik pitched his concept to Blizzard on behalf of his studio, Condor Inc., which would later become Blizzard North. The original design docs, revealed for the first time at this year's Game Developers Conference, showed that the game started out as a traditional turn-based roguelike. According to the docs, Diablo was intended as a feel-good hack-and-slash, and that the game would stress simplicity in an age of quote-unquote multimedia extravaganzas and quote-unquote needless scale and complexity. One might remember that in the mid to late 90s was when CD-ROMs were in their infancy, and gamers couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting a full-motion video adventure game. Oh, God. And one of them starred, one called Fork in the Road starred Rob Schneider. Anyways. Aside from being turn-based, most of Diablo remains the same. Players start in a village with a single dungeon that goes down, down, and deeper down with randomly generated levels. Some of the tech of the day is mentioned, such as including same-machine two-player games and multiplayer sessions via LAN and modem. Yes, and we're not talking about broadband modems, by the way. We're talking about 56K modems.
Yeah, that old dial-up.
Or if you're unlucky, 9600K modems.
Get them AOL modems.
Anyway, another feature was that, in a two-player game, there would be a timer that forced you to take an action, or you'd lose it. Another feature that would have been in the game was permadeath, as a PC being killed would wipe the character off the hard drive. Finally, for those of you who complain that there's too much planned downloadable content in today's games, Brevik wrote in his design doc that Diablo's marketing model would be inspired by Magic the Gathering, which had debuted the year before, in 1993. He envisioned having Diablo then have expansion discs, which would add more monsters, items, traps, and graphic upgrades. Each disc would cost $4.95, which would be about $8 in today's money. And Brevik stated that players would buy them just to collect them all. A collector type art card representing a rare item in a pack could enhance this sense of collectability. Those around during the speculation boom of comic books during the mid-90s will probably recognize this sales tactic. If expansion discs were successful, Brevik envisioned that expansion pack series could be released. Again, a la Magic the Gathering's various expansion boosters, Dark Nightmares and Holy Avengers were two suggested titles. Although I will say, $8 is still a little bit more than half of what you have to pay for a Call of Duty expansion pack, so it isn't as bad.
Yeah, I agree with that. That is a good sales tactic, because I did have a bit of a Magic the Gathering addiction.
Oh, yes.
I loved the art on the cards, and I wanted to collect them, and it was just like I had to make myself stop. You know, because it's like, I'm not even playing Magic with anyone, so it was like so pointless to buy more cards.
That's why I bought Sid Meier's Jewels of the Planeswalkers, because then you can play Magic against the computer.
Yeah.
And you can use the banned cards.
I will say this. We love Final Fantasy now, and we love Phantasy Star now, but when those games first came out, like Final Fantasy VI and Ultima and all that stuff,
yeah.
A lot of those games did not do very well. Like, JRPGs did not sell very well.
No.
Well, it's comparison, because here's the thing is that they sold really well in Japan, and Japan had roughly the same number of gamers that we had in the United States. Because, remember, in the 90s, it wasn't cool to play video games. There wasn't many people playing video games.
But it wasn't until 1997 when Final Fantasy VII dropped that that actually became a huge thing. Final Fantasy VII was one of the first RPGs of that style that really broke ground and like brought the world into that sort of style and made them love it.
See, the problem is that at least console gamers were getting RPGs. I remember in 94, 95, 96, there was nothing. There was absolutely no role-playing games. The only people who were making role-playing games were indie developers, and then they were just these small little things in a magazine. You couldn't find them anywhere else. You know, I mean, the people who had to go word of mouth or the guys who did, oh, shoot, what was the name of that series? Really long-running series of this indie game.
I think I was playing a lot of the SSI Goldbox RPG for computers.
But the problem with that was that those were from the late 80s, and you had to...
I didn't care.
I'm just saying, they were from the late 80s. I don't know what the last... And by the time it reached the last one, what was the last Forgotten Realms one? Dark Queen? It was a Champions of Kryn series, and it was Dark Queen of Kryn, or something like that?
Dark Queen of Kryn? No, that's Dragonlance.
But I'm just saying, it was the Gold Box.
Pools of Radiance, Silver Swords, and something else, yeah.
But the last of those... of those traditional turn-based RPGs from the, I think it was the Dark Queen of Kryn, which was the last one.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that those games didn't have fans and didn't have followings. I'm just saying that Final Fantasy VII was really the one where people remember, like even your standard person who wasn't into games remembered getting into that one.
People go on and on about Final Fantasy VII, and you really don't hear about the first six. People don't really talk about the first six like you hear people talking about Final Fantasy VII. You're right on there. It really just kind of broke out and said, you know, like, here I am, and people actually acknowledged its existence, and you can even get references from that game, and you don't get people referencing Final Fantasy VI story at all.
I'll give you a hint of how bad it was, though, for PC role-playing games. Ultima 8 came out in 1994, and it wasn't until 1999 that you had an Ultima 9, which was terrible, I know. But you'll see, during that period, they didn't even release an Ultima game.
Yeah.
You know?
That is bad.
Diablo came out, and it was really cool because it was dark and moody, and that guitar riff. Everybody was drawn in by that guitar playing in that game. You know, that sort of, you know, medieval guitar, sort of like...
Spanish guitar.
Yeah. Then you had the Interplay and Black Isle collaborations, and then it just exploded. Because Baldur's Gate came out in 1998 as well, and Baldur's Gate 2, which was the one that really exploded. Diablo 2 and Baldur's Gate 2 both came out in 2000. And then everybody started making a role-playing game. It was back. It was fully back at that point. And I know Scott is going to give his usual praise of the Baldur's Gate series now.
Well, yeah. I mean, Dragon's Spear is coming out now, and I'm hoping that leads to a Baldur's Gate 3. That would be really awesome. I think that's been the plan.
You know what always seems to me like the redheaded stepchild of that is Icewind Dale? And no one ever talks about Icewind Dale.
Well, because Icewind Dale doesn't have a story. It has a story, but it doesn't have, like, memorable characters.
But
like
something
you
said about just
Boo.
Going around and whacking people. I mean, just...
Yeah, it's pretty much what you're doing. But, I mean, you do have a story. It's just that it's very blank slate. and there's, like, again, no memorable characters. When you create memorable characters, I think that's why Final Fantasy VII, one of the reasons at least, Final Fantasy VII really hit such a chord, is they had really memorable characters. People that you remember. You talk about Cloud and Aeris in that. You talk about Minsk and Boo in Baldur's Gate. And people remember those characters, and they talk about them, and that's how the you know, continues.
See, and Final Fantasy VII did a twofold thing. Not only did it get people excited about RPGs, but it made them want to go back and look at maybe some of the things they'd missed.
I know you're saying that, but, you know, from someone who was in his 20s at the time, PC and console was a wide gulf. You might as well just been playing on Saturn if you're playing console RPGs. For PC gamers, there was nothing. There was absolutely nothing. Except the crap that SSG released. And I'm not talking about SSI. I'm talking about SSG.
I know, I've heard you.
Yeah. Simon & Schuster. The garbage that Simon & Schuster was releasing. Yes, the book company was releasing games. I forgot what
I mean. I have a question. Oh, if Diablo had come out as a roguelike turn-based, do you guys think it would have succeeded?
It would have failed. It would have failed.
Because the first Fallout was like that, and I remember, as much as I enjoy like Fallout for what it is, and I enjoy the story, and I played that game because I'm a huge Fallout fan, that game was a hard game to play to the end.
It was supposed to be hard.
And not hard in the way of, oh, this is difficult. It was hard in the way of, oh my fucking God, I'm tired of this game.
Yeah, I know.
That was done by Chris Taylor.
It became a chore.
It was a 1997 game, so yeah. I mean, Fallout 2 was the one that really exploded that series, which I think was 1999. Fallout
2. But even Fallout 2 was a turn-based sort of game.
Yeah, and it was very difficult. I think Fallout, when that game went 3D in Fallout 3, I think really got a lot of people's attention because they liked, just they felt more immersed in it. I mean, more people want to be in that first person view, even though I like isometric personally.
Do you still mourn Fallout Van Buren?
Yeah, I read about that. Yeah, but you know, I got Wasteland 2, so that's Fallout 3 for me.
But I just think to myself, if Diablo had come out as like a Fallout-style game, no, there is no way I would have had the patience for that.
I think I would have loved it, but that's me.
See, the thing about doing Diablo as a roguelike, as a true roguelike, turn-based, I think would have failed because we already saw that kind of game, you know, and that kind of game was the one that people stopped playing because... See, the thing about Diablo was that it was taking things from things that were really popular. What was really popular... Real-time strategy games, you know?
Yeah.
And the fact that all you did was get your guy over to, and click. That's it. You want to hit him? Click. Click the button. Click the mouse. That's why they called, you know, that's why they called Diablo a mouse breaker, you know, because that's all you did. Click, 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 you know? But people loved it. And the loot rewards, it proved that loot reward is really, really important in in any role-playing game. You want to feel like the loot that you're picking up is worth something.
Even absolutely.
Garbage, and you can just toss it in the trash. I'm talking about the stuff, you know, because Too Human. I never got that loot reward thing. It never really clicked with me. And I think that's one of the problems of the game was that, you know, it was a Diablo-style game, but it was the loot didn't really, you know, and that's also.
Are you talking about Silicon? Destiny. Are you talking about Silicon Knights Too Human?
Silicon Knights. Dennis Dyack. And then the fact of the matter is that all copies of Too Human had to be recalled and destroyed.
I still have my copy somewhere.
Yeah. They all had to be because of the because Silicon Knights used the Unreal Engine without their permission, and now all of them have to be destroyed if they're found. So you better hide
I'm
that
keeping
away. Because okay. Knights are, look, I have a copy. Oh, I'm sorry, sir. You're going to have to give it to me so I can, and he takes it and he just takes a hammer out and just smashes it.
If it's digitally online somewhere, I think it's too late now. It's
going
to exist forever.
I guess, but you have to automatically delete it. You have to put a worm in the internet that finds all codes of Too Human and deletes them. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody really took that. I think it was only that the retailers had to destroy them. You know, it wasn't like E.T. in which they just tossed them out. You know, they actually had to destroy these copies. thing I wanted to say earlier was that you'll never have this anymore in which a genre is left for dead. Because now we have Kickstarter and crowdfunding, and if people want a game, they're going to get it. If, you know,
yep.
That's the space simulation genre, or space combat genre, you know, the Wing Commanders and the Freelancers, you know, that was quote-unquote dead until people said, we want a space combat simulator. And now one of the biggest crowdfunded games ever is a space combat with Star Citizen, which is split into two games.
Crazy.
Which they already knew would happen, though. They already knew that it wasn't a big shock. You know, you have your single-player mode that's separate, and you have your multiplayer mode that's separate. The one
I think this might be a good segue for that one game that you're saying, speaking of crowdfunding roguelike games, that Tyranny game.
Oh, yeah, Tyranny. That's Obsidian's new game, and they're collaborating with Focus Home. And that's important because Focus Home is a major publisher. You know, Focus Home has really gotten big in the last few years. I mean, they're not quite at EA and Activision yet, but they're there. I mean, in Europe, they might as well be EA or, you know. And the thing about Focus Home is they're really good at spotting talent. I mean, it's not hard to spot Obsidian's talent, but I just mean, you know, and watch this. I found out it wasn't Focus Home that was backing it, although I'm pretty sure it was. Oh, no, I was wrong. That's right. It's Paradox Interactive. They, too, have become huge as well. Although, I will say this. It's a stretch for Paradox, because the only role-playing game I can think of from Paradox is Knights of, you know, the meta game in which you're playing a role-playing group. You know, Knights
Didn't
of
they help with Pillars? And
Pillars of Eternity. Least... But see, that's afterwards, though. No, they bought it after it was made.
Okay.
You know, they're just... No, this is a collaboration between Obsidian and Paradox, right from the
okay.
start. So, just a word of advice for Paradox. Make sure the game is complete. Don't force a release date on Obsidian, because everything they've ever made has been buggy as hell, except for Pillars of Eternity, and that's because Pillars of Eternity was a crowdfunded game, and they were just going to release it whenever it was ready. So
it's called Tyranny, right? The new
Tyranny,
one?
Yeah, Tyranny.
Yeah.
It sounds genius. That's the one where you're playing
you're
pretty much after.
You're a minion of an evil dude, and it's sort of
then
like,
the,
Lord.
You're not necessarily evil. The you're working for an evil empire that
yeah,
has conquered the world
so
or conquered
that,
your region.
Here's the thing. The premise of the game is that the massive, big, huge battle between good and evil has been fought, and
yep.
evil won. And your
and
job
you
is
are,
a tenant of the evil.
You're like a... You're a law enforcer, and you can decide how you want to mete out the law, if you want to be cruel or if you want to be just.
And every other Obsidian game, everything you do has an effect that'll appear later in the game. That's Obsidian's
mm-hmm.
thing, by the way. They love to do that. I mean, Alpha Protocol is full of that. Everything you do, they'll notice.
Honestly, I would love a game where, like this setup where you work for an evil guy, and if you go and try to do good, he just fries you right at the beginning of the game.
Actually, I prefer, you know, that I loved being a light-sided character for the Empire in Star Wars: The Old Republic. I was the spy guy, you know, and his story is the best of them all because he's loyal to the Empire for the most part, but the Empire is being run by idiots. They're being run by violent morons in terms of the Sith, you know, Inquisitors and all that stuff. And people try to kill each other. That's not how you run a government. You can't have people try to kill each other to rise up. So what happens is their entire job is to make sure that their bullshit remains high up, you know, doesn't come down and ruin the Empire. They're saving the Empire from themselves, basically.
Yeah, because I'm wondering how evil are they talking? Are we talking about like cartoon mustache twirling evil, or are we talking?
You're talking about your typical evil overlord.
Yeah.
But the thing is that he's in his own place though, so you're his
right.
you're his eyes and ears and mouth, and it's your job to mete out justice however you see fit. And since
mm-hmm.
evil is there, you are the what's it called, the judge and executioner. How you deal with it, and what I love is that people will start to react to you. You know, like if you're always killing people at the drop of a hat, they're gonna see. It's so tempting to go one of two ways: either saintly, or do what I did in what was the name of that game by Arcane? You know, I'm looking at my shelf and trying to remember what that game was now. But I just murdered everybody, you know, because the stealth wasn't working for me. Oh, Dishonored. The stealth wasn't working for whatever reason, you know, and everything I tried to do good was turning out bad. So I said, screw it. That's it. I'm murdering everybody, and I'm also murdering everybody innocent in the place because I don't want any witnesses.
Yeah, I'm hoping for something. Them. I'm hoping for something like subtle and not just being a thug. I mean, being a thug can be an option, but I want the option to be a little bit more intellectual, like a villain,
gradients
and not. I mean,
gradients of evil. No, you know, well, here it's Obsidian. I'm pretty sure they'll be able to let you be, say, a pragmatic overlord in which, you know, you're fair but you're also brutal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, you're innocent, so we're going to let you go. But you're guilty, off with his head right now. We're not even going to wait. Right here, on this spot, kill him.
I hope there's substantial systems in place that I can convince people that we're not the evil ones anymore.
Exactly.
We're the good ones because
sure
we won history.
That is a part of it, by the
exactly.
way. Part of it. It says right in the press release that it is your job to sway people's hearts and minds, and you can sway them in the way that you want. So maybe you want them to cower in front of the evil overlord, you know, or maybe you just want to tell them, listen, you know, we're brutal, but we're fair. I'm going to see if I can get the exact quote here because
we're still going to be evil. We're evil as shit, but we want you to think we're not so that you'll do as we say.
Oh yeah. I mean, you should also be a liar. You could be a liar, too, I guess. Here it is. The player's nonlinear structure. By the way, you can go anywhere you like in this world. You're not stuck to one place.
Lovely.
Allows players to explore the conquered world, interacting with the populace with the power to inspire loyalty, disgust, or fear. It's up to the player. So you're trying to inspire some sort of emotions from them. Anyway, that wasn't even one of the items.
I just thought we should talk about it a little bit, at least.
It was definitely worth it. That is definitely interesting.
Yeah, so anyways, you can take this one now, Scott.
Okay. 30 launch titles for Oculus Rift revealed, each with comfort ratings from the Game Watcher. Oculus has released a list of games that will be available on launch for upcoming virtual reality headset. The Oculus Rift. Interestingly, the hardware manufacturer also rated each game in terms of comfort. The three ratings are intense, moderate, and comfortable. Judging by the list, titles in which the action is frantic and the camera movement is quick and sudden are intense. Games titles like Adrift and Eve, Valkyrie, the moderate titles seem to be games that are mostly first person but aren't as frantic include games like VR Tennis Online and The Climb. Comfortable games are mostly static such as Pinball FX2 and Defense Grid 2. The Oculus Rift is due to be released in March 28, 2016. And I'm glad that they have a variance on that because some people might be getting vertigo and headaches with intense movement like that.
Yeah, you know, you always see like the M rating, and beside it, it has things like violence, sexual content, things like that. And like we've talked about this before, Jonah's definitely brought this up. But like, I imagine on a game like Mirror's Edge, you would have intense, and then next to it, will cause barf.
That's good. Yeah, because like I mean, my wife suffers from 3D. Motion sickness, so I can imagine what this would cause her and other people. And I think I've read stories about people getting headaches and motion sickness from this kind of thing. So having warnings on this might make you sick is a good idea. Maybe try to demo this out before you buy it.
Absolutely.
You know, Sony has banned said that children should not be using the PlayStation VR at all. So
yeah,
that might give you
good.
A hint of what's going on here.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have a feeling that even the comfortable games aren't going to be comfortable after 45 minutes anyway.
Yeah.
Well, if it's like they're saying, if it's just like pinball, I can't imagine pinball.
So the eye strain.
Yeah.
I'd rather just go buy a pinball machine.
I used to own a pinball machine.
Oh,
I was one of those
man.
Lucky kids. I had a pinball machine. I forgot the name of it, though.
Don't you wish you could have worn a helmet on your head while you played it that made you uncomfortable?
No.
Exactly.
Anyways, we got to move forward. Mass Effect War. Developer wore new IP on t-shirt. Says no one noticed. And this comes from us from Game Watcher. BioWare isn't above trolling, it seems, as the studio's head of design and art, Alistair McNally, says he strolled around the game developers conference wearing a t-shirt with the unannounced IP on it, and no one noticed. He tweeted after the conference, and that's GDC 2016 in the books. One of the things I love most about the industry is you can have friends from all over the planet. It was also fun to walk around GDC 2016 in a t-shirt with our new IP on it, and no one batted an eyelid. Since the tweet, BioWare fans have been scouring the internet for pics of McNally and his alleged t-shirt. No pics have been found yet. The new IP was teased by then-project director Casey Hudson at PAX East 2013, who stated he wanted a new IP to become the franchise on the scale of Mass Effect. Since then, the only information about the IP is that it would deal with quote-unquote contemporary stories. That excites me, actually. I'd like to see an RPG that is set in the present in a real world that isn't science fiction and isn't fantasy.
I mean, well, there was Heavy Rain. But yeah, I guess
that's not
they.
That's
Parasite. Oh well, Parasite Eve. Yeah, I guess it did have.
I was actually the Division. It comes very close to it.
Yeah, it had monsters and. Yeah, I guess I see your point because like any RPG I can think of that's set in the modern either has magic or sci-fi influences. So you want something that's just totally. But it's like without that magic and sci-fi, like what's the point?
Well, you did have that cyberpunk game by Ubisoft, Watch Dogs, which stunk.
Yeah,
I tried playing.
Bad.
The main character was unlikable. Everybody was unlikable, and it wasn't very playable. That was a deadly combination for me.
I don't know if I would call that an RPG. Sorry, go ahead,
RPG.
DJ.
What is that game?
How?
You have to level up your stuff for one. You know, it's not just an open world game.
Did you ever play Shenmue?
Oh, God, no. No.
You didn't?
I mean, if you want to go that, Yakuza is also a quote-unquote modern-day thing, but... No, how about this? No mobsters either.
Okay, that takes out...
That takes out Grand Theft Auto if you wanted to include
and
that.
And L.A.
Too.
Noir.
L.A. Noir was an adventure game. That wasn't an RPG.
Yeah.
I mean, you could skip combat. If you didn't want to do it, which I like, by the way. I like a game that says, you know what, if you don't want to do combat, screw the combat. We'll just go to what we do best instead of some lame.
Just go to the story, yeah. Because that can be frustrating if you're just trying to get to the story and the stupid combat is killing you over and over again.
On the other hand, though, like half of Earthbound is like that.
Well, you know, I have to get back. That reminds me, I have to get back to Pillars of Eternity because they now have that story mode. In which you could just burn through the combat just to get to the dialogue and stuff.
Huh.
Yeah, but you probably won't be killing the Archer Dragon still. That thing is a major pain in the butt.
Spoilers! I don't care.
It's not a spoiler. It's an optional boss, and the optional bosses are always the hardest ones to fight.
Yeah, that's why I dropped Dragon Age Inquisition. It's just the game just repelled me. The combat was so boring. So were the people. So were the conversations.
Yeah, I found all of Dragon Age to be kind of boring.
No, I love Dragon Age Origins, and I liked Dragon Age 2. Just Dragon Age Inquisition just did it for me.
Yeah.
So. Anyways, the question of the week is, what game editors have you used?
I used Unlimited.
Before, but now we're going to do it again, since TJ is here. So go ahead, TJ.
For me...
When you say game editors, are you talking like level editors and stuff like that?
Level editors, map editors, whatever game editors. Doesn't matter.
Oh, man. You think? Off the top of my head, I remember Duke Nukem had a level editor a while back.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed that one quite a bit.
Well, that one I did a lot, too. As a matter of fact, my very first level editing experience with shooters was with Duke 3D, and then I graduated to Unreal Ed.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really went. I mean, I was. Here's the thing. I'm famous in Eastern Europe and Russia for my Heroes of Might and Magic maps for number one and for two and three.
Oh, how could I forget? Little Big Planet. That is a really fun level editor.
Oh yeah, I also used Unreal Adventures, or was it Unlimited Adventures?
Oh, Unlimited
I
Adventures. I did that one too. Yeah, which
yes,
you can create
that,
your own gold box game.
There's also RPG Maker was also pretty cool.
Adventure Construction Set. I like that one. Even it was a top down, but you know what? It was surprisingly complex. There was also the Bard's Tale Construction Kit too. I forgot what it was called, but I never used it. I never got a chance to. Oh, I actually did Game Maker from Electronic Arts, and I actually created my own version of a scrolling shooter like Xevious. That was the only type of game I was playing at the time too. Well, not really, but. That's the question of the week. What game editors have you used? So look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy our feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast or the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter. Alpha Shard. I'm sorry, Scott Dirk is at Alpha Shard. And TJ Denzer is at Johnny Chugs with one G.
Indeed.
Because, you know, every time I hear Chugs, I think Jugs, and then I think two Gs.
Not quite.
Well, we know where your mind is.
Yeah, dinner. An all-milk dinner. Oh, I'm kidding. Wow. That went to a place that we should
It certainly
not...
did.
Yes. So anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Good to be back. See you next week.
Back, yeah. Good to be back, uh-huh. Yeah, good to be... Well, it is good for you to be back. So, welcome back.
Thank you.
And you won...
Yeah, sorry you missed the previous episode.
You won your bowling competition, so at least it was worth it.
Yeah, definitely.